The House will come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici,
here.
Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, Crummel, Jensen, Lim, Minnis.
Good morning.
The flag salute will be led by Representative John Dellum.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony will be presented by Representative Brian Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I sat out there last week and I heard the moment of silence so many times, and given that we need wisdom in this chamber, I thought that I would volunteer to provide quotes in the future. I will tell you just as an opening that the next quote is coming from John F. Kennedy. So this is a bipartisan effort, and I will remind you that even though this is a quote from Theodore Roosevelt, that when he joined the Bull Moose Party, he became a nonpartisan as far as our two parties were concerned. Theodore Roosevelt was the 26th President of the United States. Upon assuming office in his first term, September 14, 1901, in his speech, he said, The true Christian is a true citizen, lofty of purpose, resolute in endeavor, ready for a hero's deeds, but never looking down on his task because it casts the day of small things, scornful, baseless, awake to his own duties as well as his rights, following the higher law with reverence, and in this world doing all things within his power lies, so that when death comes he may feel mankind in some degree is better because he lived. A thorough knowledge of the Bible is worth a college education. Again, Theodore Roosevelt, September 14th, 1901, and I hope some of this wisdom comes back to our chamber.
Courtesies. Representative Berger.
Thank you.
Colleagues on the South Aisle standing there trying not to get in the way of you picking up your paycheck is a constituent of mine by the name of Dick Haglund. He is a great guy, a retired dentist, and a volunteer for CASA in the building today. He also happens to be a darn good golfer, so please welcome him.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to introduce you to my new intern, Matthew Garvey, who's here from California, but we won't hold that against him, attending the University of Oregon as a political science major. I'm trying not to hold the duck thing against him, too. He's involved with many school activities and been a campaign worker. His mother was a high school business teacher, or has been, for 26 years. And his favorite political figures include Barack Obama, fittingly enough, Teddy Roosevelt, and Stephen Colbert.
Very good. Welcome. Thank you, Representative Beyer.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I have a group of librarians from my local library that are up in the gallery up here visiting. They're on an in-service day. And I wanted to take this chance to welcome them and let you know that every year the State Library recognizes outstanding ready-to-read grant projects that have been very effective in achieving goals of the program. And in Springfield was one of the cities that was awarded this recognition. They partnered with five local child care centers and preschools to present outreach story times and provide classrooms with library books and teacher support materials. The librarian visited 14 classrooms a month, and I am pleased to have them here, and I'd like you to welcome them.
It's a pleasure to have you all visiting today. Welcome. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to welcome a couple of constituents who are visiting the Capitol with me today. Kevin Kirkamo and his father, Kurt Kirkamo, from Lake Oswego, are watching what how we do our work in this building today, and I'd like to extend courtesies of the building to them. Thank you very much.
Any further courtesies? Messages from the Governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President informing the Senate to pass Senate Bill 5519, adopted SJM 3, SJR 15. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that he has signed SCR 3.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SJM 3, urging President of the United States Congress to re-examine United States foreign policy towards Ethiopia. SJR 15, declaring legislative support of Columbia River Crossing Project.
Measures read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report files dated February 28th and March 1st, 2007 have been distributed. Okay. Propositions and motions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to permit immediate reconsideration of the vote by which the House failed to pass House Bill 2707. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Butler.
Speaker, I move the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass House Bill 2707.
Representative Butler moves that the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass House Bill 2707. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker and colleagues, thank you very much. As you'll recall, 2707 failed to pass. I voted on a prevailing side, and I'm requesting that the we have now an opportunity to reconsider the measure on the House floor at this particular time.
Great. Further discussion? Representative Butler, do you wish to close?
Mr. Speaker, thank you. My comments are that many things have happened the last 12 to 24 hours. I appreciate the fact that we'll have an opportunity to reconsider this motion and that bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Those who are of the opinion that the House should reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass House Bill 2707 will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Scott. Representative Scott is excused. Representative Clem. Clem votes aye. Representative Dallin votes aye. Representative Thatcher votes aye. Representative Flores. Representative Flores votes aye. Wisnett. Representative Wisnett. Representative Wisnett is off the floor. I called him Clem. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. In compliance with Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, Section 468, Subsection 3, the question immediately recurs on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2707. Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Speaker, I move that House Bill 2707 be re-referred to the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Barnhart moves that House Bill 2707 be re-referred to the Committee on Revenue. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In accordance with the discussion that occurred among the leaders of the House and the Senate yesterday, this bill requires amendment in order to bring it into compliance with the discussion. And the way to do that, of course, is to re-refer the bill to the Committee on Revenue. Our plan is then to also bring forward another bill that will also complete the agreement reached during that conversation for the consideration of the House.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close?
Thank you. No.
Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2707 should be referred to the Committee on Revenue will say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 2707 is re-referred to the Committee on Revenue. Representative Richardson, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, the House Republicans would move that we have a brief recess for a caucus.
Representative Richardson has asked for a recess.
15 minutes.
15 minutes. Without objection. Representative Hunt, do you wish to add anything? No? So we'll recess for 15 minutes. come to order, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Barnhart Berger. Beyer. Beyer Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Bruin Buckley. Burley. Burley Butler. Butler Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Galizio. Gerard. Gelzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Holvey. Holvey Hunt. Hunt Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Greg Smith, Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Not answering. Barnhart. Beyer. Bruin. Burley. Holvey. Hunt. Nathanson. Greg Smith. Excused. Esquivel. Lim. Minnis. Excused for business of the House. Nolan.
We have a quorum. When we recessed, we were under propositions and motions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2210, 2211, and 2212 be read third time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill. Before we read the bill, the chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance the order of business to third reading of House bills. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2210, relating to fuel and prescribing an effective date.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2210B. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, the bill before you is an excellent opportunity to move this state forward in many regards, towards greater energy independence and less reliance on foreign sources of oil, towards keeping Oregon's dollars invested in state rather than sent out of state and abroad, and towards new economic opportunity, particularly in rural areas of our state. Finally, this bill moves us towards greenhouse gas reductions and better air quality. For these reasons, it is not surprising that House Bill 2210 came out of both the House Energy and Environment and the House Revenue Committees with unanimous support. It's also not surprising that the bill is supported by a broad range of stakeholders, including the Oregon Wheat Growers, the Oregon Farm Bureau, Associated Oregon Industries, Oregon Business Association, Oregon Trucking Association, Northwest Biofuels Association, the Oregon Conservation Network, Environmental Council, and many more. Colleagues, rarely do we have an opportunity to vote on a bill that will have such a significant impact on the state while also having overwhelming support from all economic sectors and both political parties. I want to thank Vice Chair Burley for helping me to shape this bill in committee and develop strong bipartisan support. I also want to thank the Governor for his leadership on this legislation and for convening a work group during the interim. Colleagues, this bill plays to Oregon's strengths. While Oregon may not have natural gas, coal, or oil resources that other states have, it has a great diversity of renewable energy resources. That bodes very well for Oregon as the world and the nation accelerate their focus on reducing fossil fuel emissions and shifting to cleaner energy sources. Biofuels offer us that opportunity to shift to safer, cleaner burning renewable fuels. And in particular, biodiesel reduces emissions of particulate matter, air toxics, carbon monoxide, and sulfur oxides. It is a much preferred alternative to petroleum diesel, which is the number one air toxic in Oregon. Ethanol, like biodiesel, reduces carbon monoxide pollution and also reduces exhaust pollutants that contribute to smog. Each gallon of corn ethanol used in a 10% blend with gasoline will cut greenhouse gas emissions by 12 to 19%. For now, corn, primarily from the Midwest, will be a short-term feedstock for most of the ethanol production. However, once cellulosic ethanol technology is proven and technologies for producing ethanol from agricultural waste, poplar trees, woody biomass, and other renewable biomass sources are mainstreamed, Oregon will be positioned to become one of the nation's premier producers of ethanol fuel. The governor announced in January that the first new biomass facility in the United States in over a decade will be built in Lakeview. This bill provides important new incentives for the biomass to electricity sector and will help to ensure that the Lakeview facility moves forward and is replicated in other locations in the state. But the economic impacts to Oregon are just as important. Every year, Oregonians spend billions of dollars on imported foreign oil. These dollars are sent directly out of state and often overseas. With a renewable fuel standard, Oregonians will have access to cleaner, renewable fuels at the pump that are produced right here in Oregon. Every dollar spent on gasoline or diesel containing Oregon-grown biofuels will be reinvested in the local economy several times over, supporting Oregon farmers and businesses. Colleagues, Oregon is poised to compete nationally in producing these alternative fuels. Already, major new biofuels facilities are being built or planned in locations such as Clatskanie, Ontario, Boardman, Salem, and Klamath Falls. And this bill ensures that the feedstock to serve those facilities will be increasingly grown by Oregon farmers. This bill also will improve Oregon's opportunity to benefit from federal dollars increasingly being invested in the biofuel sector. The current administration has committed to spending millions of dollars to ramp up scientific research, and research in gallons of biofuels produced in this bill will position Oregon as one of the national leaders on biofuels production and policy. Colleagues, as many of you remember, I worked hard on a bipartisan biofuels bill last session that unfortunately died due to partisan politics. This is our opportunity to correct that shortcoming, move forward in a bipartisan way, and move Oregon toward a brighter and more renewable energy future. So I urge your aye vote on this important bill.
Recognize the co-carrier, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Dingfelder did a great job of describing the purposes and basic attributes of this bill. I want to speak to it primarily on the issues having to do with the revenue impacts and on the overarching strategy that's related to this revenue portion of this bill. I'm not going to read the impact statement because you have it, but simply to note that the committee went through the process of reviewing the various credits that we were proposing to offer with the idea in mind that we are trying to bootstrap and bootstart an industry in Oregon that could have profound long-term effects on the Oregon economy and on such important issues as global warming. We believe that there is a tipping point for the development of these industries, and they're related to costs. So as you look at this bill, you'll recognize that there are a number of tax credits in the bill which are designed, after the testimony we heard, to encourage the development of this industry, to encourage the development of the farming sector utilization of crops that support the industry so that we can get this thing started. There are sunsets built into the bill for all aspects of the tax credits with the idea in mind that these are temporary tax credits, that they will be needed only at the beginning of the development of the industry, and that eventually they can simply go away because they won't be needed any longer. If that turns out not to be true, of course, the legislature has the right to extend the credits at a later time. I also want to talk briefly about the committee's, your revenue committee's commitment to a process similar to a budgetary process as we spend tax money on tax credits rather than on the budget. As you are very aware, the Ways and Means Committee has benchmark requirements and measurements built into every budgetary item. As we go through the tax credit system that Oregon has developed over the years, the tax expenditure system and the tax expenditure report, it is the plan of the Revenue Committee to add purposes and benchmarks and matrices to matrices to the various tax expenditures so that we will have a way of measuring the effectiveness of them and whether they actually accomplish the purposes for which they were intended or not, so that those that are obsolete can be removed, those that don't meet the purposes can be removed, and potentially, of course, those that are meeting the purposes but need to be extended can be. And I would like you to note that on the staff measure summary for this bill at the bottom of the first page and continuing on to the top of the second page, there is a statement of the matrices that were adopted for evaluating the producer credits and also for evaluating the consumer credits for this bill. These matrices were developed for us by the Department of Energy with the idea that they could be generated using materials they intended to, the measurements they intended to generate anyway, but which were related to our issue. We have commitments from the Department of Revenue that these matrices will be included in the evaluation section of the tax expenditure report, so that it will be available to the legislature and to the public to review the outcomes of these tax credits to determine whether they're doing their job or not. You should expect that bills that come from the Revenue Committee involving tax expenditures will contain this kind of a report for the future. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Representative Dingfelder and Barnhart, for your opening comments.
To the bill?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
To the bill.
Well, colleagues, I feel very exciting because we got to work on this last session and we're working on it again now, but this is a great policy. This is very significant for our state. It's a very exciting policy, and it's exciting because we get to work together in a very bipartisan manner to get this enacted. I'd like to bring to your attention, those of us that were here in 2005, you'll recall that we passed Senate Bill 1072. That bill empowered the Oregon Department of Forestry to provide policy input for the management of federal forest lands in Oregon, with particular concern with the threat of catastrophic wildfire. And also in 2005, Governor Kulongoski adopted the Renewable Energy Action Plan, and part of that was the creation of the Oregon Forest Biomass Working Group. And this group was formed by both the Department of Forestry and the Department of Energy to identify how we can improve forest health by reducing forest fuel loads and accelerate the use of forest woody biomass as a value-added commodity and energy supply. And colleagues, I tell you that because a lot of the focus on this bill is on the alternative fuels, the biodiesel and the ethanol production, and the standards, but I also want to call to your attention that there's quite a bit in there, as Representative Barnhart had mentioned, some of the tax credits and whatnot that address these issues that the Forest Biomass Working Group identified and helps us try to address these issues out in our forest lands. And secondly, the only other thing I wanted to bring to your attention is simply a question about, and this is not a question of the carrier, but a question about preemption. I had spent a lot of time, as this bill was being worked in the Energy and Environment Committee, talking with the owner of Bend Oil Company, which is one of our major petroleum distributors in Central Oregon. And because I wanted to get their feedback. To me, a bill like this works if we can get this product to the retail pump and in the vehicle, and the vehicle runs. That's my simple test of success on this. And so I was asking him, how, you know, do we make sure this works? Well, he expressed to me a concern about different fuel standards in different cities. So imagine this, a 10,000-gallon tanker truck from Central Oregon goes up to Portland, and they fill up at what they call the rack. That's a term I just love to use, but that's where they fill up the tanker trucks. Now, if let's say that this same truck then goes back over the mountains, and Madras and Redmond and Bend, if they were all to have different fuel standards, you can see how that would be problematic for the distribution of the product. So what I'd like to ask is that when this goes over to the Senate, we've got some amendments. We are kind of batting some around trying to figure out how we might be able to make that work. And I would trust that when this gets over to the Senate, we revisit that issue about preemption, because I think it's going to be helpful to the distribution process of this product that we'd have some uniformity throughout the state. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Kennan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. The bill. Thank you. As a first-term representative who sat on the Energy and Environment Committee where this bill was initially heard, I just wanted to give you a couple of my reflections from that process. I think it's a real credit to Chair Dingfelder, to Vice Chair Burley, and to this body, the way that this bill was deliberately, cooperatively worked on and heard. In committee, we heard farmers from Eastern Oregon, renewable fuels business people, environmentalists, and advocates for working families come together in support of this concept. And I would just conclude by saying it's especially fitting that on this day of all days, we're debating and voting on a bill that enjoys so much support from those interests that are on some issues in opposite camps and from parties in this body that also find themselves at times at odds. This was a remarkable process that really speaks to the best that this institution can do. Thank you.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'd like to share with you some of the reasons that I rise in support of House Bill 2210, and that principally being the economic and workforce development potential of this bill. This bill will help to sustain two alternative fuels plants in my district. The first is a 113 million gallon per year ethanol plant currently under construction by Cascade Grain Products. And the other is a biodiesel fuel facility that is still in the planning stages. Combined, these plants will employ over 100 people over the long term at family levels of wages, as well as a full complement of benefits, something that is indeed a rarity oftentimes in today's labor market. In addition, several hundred jobs will be generated during the construction of these plants, as more than $1 billion is, if you'll excuse the pun, pumped into our state and local economies through direct and indirect investments in these plants. Colleagues, House Bill 2210A is truly an economic pump primer, and I urge your support for this bill. Thank you very much.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do, and I
she
guess
does.
Do you want? We'll answer.
Which carrier would you like to address?
To Representative Dingfelder.
Representative Dingfelder.
Okay.
She yields.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the good representative, could you enlighten us, please, on where the raw material will come from that would be produced into ethanol in the biofuel process in Oregon?
Certainly. First, as far as for the ethanol, we will be bringing corn from the Midwest. But as soon, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, as soon as we have the cellulosic technology on board, then we'll probably be using in-state agricultural material or wood waste, and the good representative from Bend, my vice chair, talked about the importance of this woody biomass material. That would be one of the prime feedstocks for the ethanol once we convert to cellulosic.
Further question?
Further question of the carrier. Does she yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you. Representative, do you know how many Oregon farmers in their production of corn have signed up to provide corn or canola for the upcoming harvest seasons to the ethanol plant?
As far as I just checked with our different agencies, we don't have any data at this time, but since we have just one plant, the Pacific Ethanol Plant in Boardman, that's online, we would have to check with them, and I don't know if my representative from Eastern Oregon would have that, but we don't have any data at this time.
Clarifying question?
Clarification is carrier yield. Do you yield?
Yes.
She does.
Thank you. I just wonder if, from what we have seen, the lack of Oregon-produced products for this ethanol plant has anything to do, to your knowledge, with the inability of those farmers to have an adequate water supply.
As far as I know, part of it is that we do not grow a lot of corn here in the state. The type of corn that we actually use for ethanol, just to be clear, colleagues, is it's mainly field corn, most of which is fed to livestock, not humans, so that's primarily grown in the Midwest, so that's where most of that feedstock comes from. In my conversations with folks, by the way, in the Boardman plant, and I checked on this during the hearing, I think we actually had a letter from the Port of Morrow that they have all the water that they need to do any processing at this time for their plant.
Thank you. Further question?
Further question?
I yield.
Thank you. As it relates to the products that are being either shipped via train or truck from the Midwest out to Oregon, has there been an environmental impact study done, or do we know what kind of fossil fuel usage we're using in order to get the product here?
From all the information I've seen, the fossil fuel usage to ship any of these feedstocks from the Midwest would be less than the fossil fuel we're using to ship from the Middle East.
Clarifying question?
Clarification. This is carrier yield.
I do.
She does.
Do you think we could further reduce fossil fuel usage if we had a higher yield or more production of the above-mentioned products grown locally?
As I mentioned before, once we start using cellulosic for the ethanol, then we will be using in-state feedstocks. Regarding the biodiesel, we are providing much of that in-state currently. So I certainly, if we're producing materials in-state and that requires less transportation, whether it's from the Middle East or from the Midwest, that would be more beneficial to the state.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The carrier has been gracious. I have one final question, please.
One final question. Carrier yield. She
I
does.
Do.
And thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm open to an answer from either of the carriers if this question requires that kind of study.
You need to direct your question to a specific person.
Well, I would stay with Representative Dingfelder. Thank you. If a farmer growing in both Oregon and Washington grows biomass in Washington for use in producing biofuels in Oregon, but can't grow that material in Oregon, does that farmer still get the Oregon tax credit for the biomass grown in Washington?
My understanding is that it must be grown in Oregon in order to receive the Oregon tax credit.
Thank you. To the bill?
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, there's been a lot of good work done on this package of bills that's before us. I believe there are some issues that we need to work on in terms of providing water for Oregon farmers to increase the production of both corn and canola that could further reduce the greenhouse effect of burning fossil fuels that could further produce more Oregon jobs. This is a good package of bills. It has broad support, It's good for Oregon business, Oregon jobs. It promotes a cleaner environment, and I'd urge your support. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, last session I heard the beginning of this story in revenue, and I'm very pleased today to hear it finally come forward as a whole package to the floor. That being said, I, in the Revenue Committee, had some issues that I wanted brought forward, and I would like to bring them forward to you today to be sure that you understand some of the testimony that we heard in revenue that you may not have heard today. One concern that we heard in revenue was a similar program in Michigan regarding mandates. They put mandates into the trucks, and all of a sudden it got cold and the trucks stopped. And there was no way to opt out of the fuel, and so it was suggested to us that we put sort of a governor's escape valve into this bill, so that if some disaster such as that would happen, the governor could take away these mandates in a hurry and get traffic moving again. That did not go into this bill, and I would suggest to you that it is a very good idea, and I would certainly like the Senate to look at that, because you're going with a new technology, and we were told, oh, that won't happen here, we're not cold enough or something. But when you start mandating what's in your fuel, and our whole economy depends on this commerce movement and our lives depend on this, I think an opt-out, a sort of a safety valve, was a very good idea and would strongly suggest that it be included. The other thing that I suggested along the same lines is this is a sort of new territory, and it has some very important mandates. The tax incentives are sunsetted, but the bill itself and the mandates are not. And I would strongly suggest that if this is a good idea, it's a good idea to take another look at it in 4 to 6 years and absolutely go back to the legislature and re-up, not just do a sunset on the incentives, but in a sunset on the whole program, so that future legislatures must come back and evaluate some of the things that we're talking about here. And did they work? And what are the statistics and numbers, and how many growers, and all of the important things that we are concerning ourselves with today. So I am suggesting these two things to you as things that need to be added to these bills in the Senate, and I strongly encourage them. That being said, I have to congratulate the proponents, the good representative from Portland, the good representative from Bend, who have worked very diligently to get this package going this session. It is my sincere hope that it helps us all, helps our ag, helps our economy, and puts us forward moving into this new technology with a few cautious caveats that be careful when you step out into new territory and try and stay on steady ground all the way. Thank you.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
If I could, Mr. Speaker, I have given Representative Barnhart a heads up on this question.
I will graciously unyield.
does Representative Barnhart yield?
Yes.
He does as well.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Can you discuss with me what the discussion was in the committees around the impact that the biofuel mandate will have on pump prices?
Yes, there was some brief discussion of that issue in the committee, primarily in the process of the public hearing, and the discussion, I think, it was inconclusive about what those effects might be, because of this whole process that we're talking about. Presupposes substantially high oil prices over the long haul. I think everything that we know about the worldwide oil situation, including refining capacity and so forth, including the increases in utilization in India and China of worldwide petroleum resources, suggest that oil prices are trending upward. And while there may be some fluctuations down, there probably will be continued upward pressure on oil prices. And I believe that was the testimony that we got in the committee. That being the case, the main issue for biofuels is going to, and its competition for price, is related to the tax credits that are in this bill, and also the quantity of production of the biofuels in the local economy and in the local area. I think it's a complex question when you get down to dealing with all of the different issues that are involved, because there are economic externalities that are related to prices. When you raise crop in Oregon and hire people in Oregon, and the farmer is paid in Oregon, and the refiner is paid in Oregon, there are effects on the Oregon economy that don't completely translate into lower prices, but in fact have a positive economic impact in Oregon. So the question gets fairly complicated, but we believe that the tax credit system that we've set up will be sufficient to incentivize the development of these crops, and that the effect on the price at the pump, which I think is the point of your question, to be either non-existent or fairly small, or perhaps even positive if the price of oil continues on its long-term trend line, as we believe it will.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up question, does Kerry yield?
Yes.
He does.
You, was there any information submitted to the committee that talked about the break-even price, or the price that fossil fuels would have to reach before biofuels became cheaper than fossil fuels?
There was no discussion of specific dollar amounts.
Thank you.
We were talking about trends.
And so the discussion, if I might have one more clarification question.
Another question of the carrier. Carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you. The discussion then, if I am correctly understanding what you're saying, was around a philosophical point rather than around any hard data being introduced into the discussion. Is that a yes or no?
Well, it's a no in the sense of when you use the word philosophical. The committee did not receive specific numbers, but we did receive testimony from a number of sources that would indicate that the relationships that I described are expected to occur.
Thank you. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I have some reservations about the mandate aspect of this bill. And I'm wondering what the impact is going to be on the people of Oregon as they go out and purchase gas that has a mandate on it for a certain percentage of biofuels. It is, in my understanding, that with current oil prices and current technology, the cost of bringing biofuels to the market exceeds the cost of fossil fuels. And there, of course, is a break-even point there, but I don't know quite what that number was. I hope that when this bill goes over to the Senate side, that the senators have a conversation about the potential of the mandate to actually increase the cost of fuel for the citizens of Oregon, because I think doing that would have a negative impact on the economic development potential that is so alive in other parts of this bill. I very much appreciate the incentives that the industry, the ag industry, the timber industry, are granted to develop the technology and bring the biofuels online, but I do have reservations about the potential impact that this has to the overall economy of Oregon as people are mandated to buy the end product if the price is higher than the fossil fuel market. I also want to commend the great work that has been done on this. I think that it's a very exciting direction for Oregon to move in. It's especially very exciting in terms of the economic potential, the economic development potential that it has for natural resource industries and for the rural areas of the state. But I am going to withhold an aye vote on this bill pending the discussion in the Senate, because I would like to see a discussion around the impact that the mandate will have on the users of fuel in the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. But before I get going, I just want somebody to take a picture of my happy face. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Because I truly am happy, Mr. Speaker, to support this bill. I was on the conference committee with representative from 23rd District last session, and I was willing to vote for that bill in any form. Unfortunately, due to a lot of bickering, it got held up. And here we are 2 years later, better late than never. But I fully support this bill. I agree with my friend from Ben. I share some of his reservations about not having a statewide standard. I think it just makes sense for the challenges he spelled out. I don't need to go over with that again. And I also have some concerns about growing the feedstock here in Oregon. Lord knows I love the corn growers in Iowa. I don't think that's any secret either. But we can do it right here in Oregon. We need to get access to our forest to provide us with the cellulosic feedstock for that technology when it comes. But even right now, we have all kinds, thousands of arable lands, acres in the state of Oregon. East of here, all we got to do is pour a little water on it, and it'll grow all the feedstock we need and not cut into our food producing here in Oregon, because I want my food coming from Oregon, too. So... and this, when we get the feedstock growing here, it'll stabilize the production cost because we won't have to ship it in, and that will stabilize the prices at the pump, which some people shared some concerns about there, too. This is a great start. I think we have some work to do. I fully encourage everyone to support the bill. Thank you very much.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I've been musing over the events of the last 18 to 20 hours, looking up here at John McLaughlin's name, seeing the sickle and the sheaves of Stover and the wheat. Here we are a century and a half later talking about what we can do with those besides feed the cattle and take care of our own economy with the animals. So, and then the events that precede that I think are of note and certainly worthy of discussion. Now, if you'll open your bill files and you've already done this, you'll find that there's a small error at the bottom of the February 22nd staff measure summary, that it's dated, or it's page 2 of 2, and then you say find the second, and it's also page 2 of 2. That's 1 and 2 of 2 pages. But you'll find at the bottom of that page that some of the items that were discussed in committee, I think those are noteworthy. I think those are things that certainly should be in the record, the public record, as to the items that we were discussing and some of the comments that were made in committee. And I think the good representative from House District 7 from the rest of the Deschutes County has brought out some of the issues that were of concern. And I just want to express one of those items for concern again, and we have a letter in the file, in the committee file, that indicates that the Oregon Department of Energy will address the issues that were of concern, but also will also work with the Department of Agriculture to make certain that as we convert Oregon's landmass from producing the food and corn and vegetables that were necessary to feed the Oregonians then and now and into the future, that we do not, in effect, take away from the foodstuffs that are necessary to continue to do that, as well as then provide for our own energy purposes. That's important. I want to also then recognize the other county from, or the other representative from Douglas County, who talked about the mandates, her concerns about the mandates, and why that's something that really should be considered on the Senate side as a discussion, as well as the preemption issues that were discussed from our colleague from Bend, that we really need to be very cautious as we move forward. And I want to acknowledge the comments that were made from our colleague from West Salem relative to the governor's authority. Now, before I got here, I used to sell fuel, and we still have some stations, but when we would sell fuel, and occasionally you'll get some bad fuel, and you got to test that fuel all the time, particularly when you get some of these great Eastern Oregon winters. And just happened that one of my competition just up the road 29 miles was not checking his fuel on a regular delivery basis. Every load that came in, and we sold a lot more fuel than he did, so I can brag on ourselves for just a moment, but he didn't check on his daily delivery. There was too much, and the distillates were delivered too much paraffin on the day that he had that delivered, and you could tell from his truck stop forward for a period of about 15 miles right up Interstate 84 that about every 200 or 300 yards there were trucks that were starting to slow down and eventually stopped. And there were about 300 trucks that day that were stopped on I-84. And we're not talking about one of those warm sunny days in Eastern Oregon. We're talking about one of those days in Eastern Oregon where the temperature was down below zero and it was cold and those trucks were stopped. So I'm very anxious, and I do want to acknowledge the comments from our colleague from West Salem that talked about having some governor's oversight on an authority. And then finally, the overall ability to come back. And again, you've looked at page 2 of 2, that talks about the matrices that we talked about in committee that will be followed up on through the Department of Energy in conjunction with efforts worked and carried forward with the Department of Economic Development as well as the Department of Agriculture. And I commend the folks from the Department of Energy for the good job they've done. I do want to commend those other folks who have come forward and have made a great effort in this process, and I just want to thank all of you who have participated in bringing us this piece of legislation. Thank you.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, colleagues. I'm going to support this bill today, and I appreciate the hard work that's been done in the Energy and Environment Committee. I appreciate all of the effort that folks have put into it, and the work that was done in the previous session in relationship to this topic. However, even in supporting it, I want to raise some perhaps words of caution. One of the things, I suppose, before though doing that, I need to congratulate the my good friends on the other side of the aisle for what they are doing to help develop the use of the Columbia River and its water for the state of Oregon. Because alternate fuels start out with the formula H2O. And in order to carry out the ambitions that we have for the alternate fuels in the state of Oregon, we're going to have to increase the use of water. Be that for agriculture and the production of stock, whether that's canola or corn or biomass, or be that for the processing of the stock, it's going to take huge quantities of water. And so as we proceed forward, I appreciate the courage with which this body is venturing out on to look at this, what has been an extremely difficult issue. In addition to that, colleagues, I am somewhat concerned on a national basis and on an international basis with what this apparently worldwide, at least nationwide, but if it's going to be successful here, it ultimately will probably be worldwide, effort to get energy of this type out of agricultural crops will be. Right now, I'm told that we have already created something of a food problem for our neighbor to the south in the country of Mexico with the rising cost of corn. As we start using foodstuffs, oh, I know this is not human food that we're using corn. This is for animal stock. But believe it or not, if you can grow feed corn on a plot of land, you can also grow the Jolly Green Giant's corn on the plot of land. This does concern me that energy is going to be creeping in here very quickly to the cost of food. We're doing a lot, we're trying to do a lot, we're chasing rainbows in this building. Are we really interested in conserving energy? Are you really interested in doing it? Then bring me a bill on a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. That's going to immediately, in this state, conserve energy. Don't ask me to vote for it, but... that, you know... Let's look at some of the other solutions as we should explore the alternate energy in this state. Thank you very much.
Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 2210. The first Oregon gold rush began in earnest about 200 years ago. The discovery of gold along the Columbia River gave rise to the evolution of varied industry, significant population growth, and shortly thereafter, Oregon statehood. I say the first Oregon gold rush because with the passage of this measure, biofuels and a larger investment category of clean technology could constitute a modern-day sequel. The new wave of American innovation is based on place more than process, firm, or industry. In a world of increasingly mobile capital, it is places with uniquely compelling characteristics that attract the entrepreneurial talent and investment capital necessary to thrive. In this competitive environment, we must maximize Oregon's capacity to innovate, not just once or twice, but over and over across communities and industry clusters. The current emphasis on place-based innovation is especially evident in the venture capital market for biofuels. To an unprecedented degree, venture capital firms are financing specific biofuel projects directly rather than financing core technologies or industrial processes. Earlier this month, a biodiesel startup in Washington State announced it had closed $113 million in equity financing and $101 million line of credit, one of the largest investments in the rapidly growing clean technology sector. That's the type of local entrepreneurial investment this measure will encourage. Without it, Venture capital dollars will flow to bordering states, leaving Oregon high and dry. According to the 2006 Clean Tech Venture Capital Report on North American venture capital investing, devotion to the clean technology segment is on the upswing, with alternative energy representing upwards of 70% of industry investment. Just to put the potential boon to our economy in perspective, during the dot-com bubble of 1999 to 2001, up to 3% of all venture capital was carved out for clean tech investments. That commitment inched up to a high of 6% from 2002 to 2005. By 2009, the report suggests it will jump to 10% of all venture capital investment activity. That amounts to between $6.2 billion to $8.8 billion invested as venture capital firms go to the markets to raise capital. Oregon has all the requisite characteristics to become a hotbed of biofuels and clean technology investment: intellectual firepower and entrepreneurial talent, a progressive environmental history, and a strong culture of innovation. Even though the gold in Oregon rivers and mountains eventually ran out, the impact of the gold rush era lives on. The state was shaped by the risk takers who stayed and helped make Oregon a place of expansive opportunity. Alternative energy is now the third largest venture capital investment category. I want to thank the good representative from Portland for her leadership on this issue and urge you to vote aye on House Bill 2210 to ensure today's Oregon entrepreneurs can take full advantage of this new opportunity to make their fortunes from the earth.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, you know, I think that this, as mentioned by the carriers and by several of the other supporters and opponents to this, has some great things that will occur. I'm not confident that we will produce a great deal of product here. As the representative from Pendleton said, we have a water deficiency that will create difficulties for us to continue that. I am hopeful that this bill does get the corrections in the Senate that have been articulated, and that we will have an opportunity to vote yes on a bill that actually will do several of the things that we're talking about and be able to do the right thing for Oregon. So in as much as this bill has some great opportunities, it has some huge liabilities that I hope get corrected over in the Senate, and that it gets returned to us and that we're able to pass it in a more efficient way. Thank you.
Representative Boquist.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, last session I sat on the committee to the wee hours of the night trying to work out a compromise on this. And as I kind of recollect back there in those waning hours, for those of you who were here, I think somewhere around 2 o'clock in the morning or 2:30, both of my kids were asleep on the couches out in the hallways. Many of you know them. And I kind of walked into my office, turned the light switch off, and those who've been in there, I don't have a couch, and I lay down on the floor like a good infantryman and tried to kind of fall asleep. And I think, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes later, the dinging started. It was the dinging here to come to the chamber, and I remember coming to the chamber, the good representative from Lake Oswego with his courteous smile talking to me. I had no clue what he was saying because I was still half asleep. And magically on that board over there came up a bill that I hadn't seen for like 5 or 6 days, and I was the carrier. And I kind of looked at that, and, you know, and they said, Representative Boquist. And I kind of, you know, stammered up here and started stammering into it, looking at the bill up there, wondering what I was saying, what it was about. It came apparent to my realization, looking in my horror to the speaker, that it was the speaker's bill. And I hadn't got a clue what it was about. And Representative from Lake Oswego here was rubbing my shoulder, trying to get me to go forward. And the bottom line is I just ran out of energy. I just ran out of energy. And to my good graces, the speaker came down and went to her desk and carried her own bill forward, and I was saved from total humiliation. What I want to talk about is running out of energy. I supported this bill last session because of the energy issue. Last time around, I liked the bill. This time around, when I wrote a note or a letter to the committee, I said I was a three-quarter supporter or a two-thirds supporter. I still have concerns about the preemption and the mandate issue. And I trust that some of those corrections will be done when it moves across the chamber to the far side. But one of the major reasons I supported this is there's a handful of countries that actually supply us our oil today, places like Colombia, Nigeria, and Venezuela.
I don't think I need to tell most of you that are know anything about history, Nigeria is in the middle of a civil war and about 50% of their production is off. Colombia has been in a staggering civil war for the last 30 years and their production is down. And our good friend to the south, Venezuela, if they had the first opportunity to sell under the euro or transfer their sales to China, would do it that fast. And we'd be standing here not wondering why our prices today are higher in Oregon than they are in Washington, who has biofuels. We'd be standing here wondering where we're going to get our fuel from. And it's for that reason I think we need to invest in Oregon. We need to invest 2 years in Oregon, establish the plants here in our state so in the future that we can become more energy independent. Again, I urge your passage, and I hope that on the Senate side several of these issues will be looked at. Thank you, colleague.
Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
I have multiple business dealings with folks who potentially could benefit from House Bill 2210.
Representative Greg Smith stated conflict of interest, and it is noted for the record. Representative Thatcher.
To the bill.
To the bill?
Yes, thank you. Colleagues, I definitely am all for biofuels and renewable energy. In fact, I have a PV, a photovoltaic system, on the roof of my business, and I would really like to support this bill 100%, but there are some things that need to be fixed, and I'm going to withhold my support on this at this time, and hopefully it'll get fixed on the Senate side, and then I'll be with you. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
In reading the bill, I see discussion of orchard mass prunings. We have no plans for any of this, but just in case we decide there's a market there in the prunings or the pears, for that matter, then.
Representative Clem has stated his conflict for the record. Representative Nolan.
Me too, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
Mr. Speaker, a member of my household has a financial interest in a firm that may benefit from this bill.
Representative Nolan has stated her conflict, and it's been noted for the record. Any further discussion? Representative Dingfelder, do you wish to close?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank you, colleagues, for this excellent and robust discussion that we've had here today on the House floor. And I'd like to address some of the concerns that were raised here before I urge your aye vote on this bill. First of all, I was reminded in regards to one of the questions that ethanol plants in Oregon are capturing corn that is flowing through the Northwest ports for export already. This is in regards to the question about additional fossil fuel for transporting corn for ethanol. So I wanted to make sure that that was addressed. Also, there were several questions about the renewable fuel standard, and I'd like to address that. As far as cost increases or supply disruptions, we had quite a bit of discussion about several of these issues in either the House Energy and Environment or in the House Revenue Committee. And the renewable fuel standards for both ethanol and biodiesel, I believe, are carefully crafted, so I don't think that they will. We heard testimony. We worked for many months in the work group. As far as price increases, this should not cause a significant increase in prices, and here's why. They are based on levels of in-state production for each fuel being met before the mandate kicks in. This will assure that there is sufficient supply to meet the level of demand created by each mandate. Just want to clarify that for the ethanol standard, it is not going to affect until at least 40 million gallons are produced in Oregon. And last year, there was about 90 million gallons of supply, even without any in-state production facilities. We expect at least two production facilities to go online in Oregon the next year. The biodiesel standard is similarly conditioned and is based on achieving a level of in-state production before it takes effect. The standard also requires the feedstock for biodiesel to be grown in the region, so just to confirm for that, and the region includes Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana before the standards become effective, further benefiting our rural economy. I also want to make sure and clarify that, you know, oil production, as oil production decreases and demand increases, gas and diesel prices will continue to rise. Investing in renewable fuels now will help protect Oregonians from price spikes and potential fuel shortages in the future. I want to be clear, this will not supplant our entire fuel supply, but it certainly will help offset that growth, that increased demand for supply. Another question or concern was raised about the quality of the ethanol and biodiesel. We had a lot of discussion with the Department of Agriculture about testing requirements. I just want to be clear that the Department of Agriculture will oversee the testing and quality of vehicle fuel. They already have the authority to do that. They already do that for our traditional petroleum, and they have the authority to suspend an additive requirement, including ethanol and biodiesel, in the event of a shortage or a major price increase in either fuel. So I just wanted to be clear on that. And I think I had one more clarification. As far as the preemption, we actually had testimony from some of the distributors, and we heard testimony saying that having one fuel standard in one city and another fuel standard in another city was not a problem. They just have to make sure that they can make those adjustments in their delivery system. We heard that directly from the distributors. So with that, colleagues, I feel like this is an important event in Oregon's history. As you've heard here today, we are poised to be a leader along with the rest of the West Coast on producing and promoting alternative and renewable fuels. And I'm really excited about this opportunity for a win-win with our economy, with our environment, and I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Voting aye is Olson.
Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Flores votes no. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Kremel votes aye. House Bill 2210B, having received constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2211, relating to renewable energy and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2211B. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is a companion bill to the bill we just heard. I'm sure we'll have just as lively and long a discussion. Maybe not. House Bill 2211 amends the Business Energy Tax Credit, we call it the BETSI, to provide greater incentives for renewable energy. Hello, why would we do that after all this discussion? It increases the credit for renewable energy systems installed by businesses from 35% to 50% and increases the project cost limit from $10 million to $20 million. It increases the tax, the increased tax credit applies to renewable energy used to generate electricity, create biofuels, and other uses of renewable energy. House Bill 2211 also provides that the cost of construction facilities to manufacture renewable energy systems and components are eligible for the increased tax credit for renewable energy. In addition, this bill provides an incentive to home builders for designing and building renewable energy features and low energy usage features in homes. The bill also makes combined heat and power projects eligible for the increased tax credit based on criteria that will be established by the Department of Energy. It also increases the size of hydro projects eligible for the tax credit from 1 megawatt to 10 megawatts. That's a number I hope it means a lot to hydro people. For projects, and they have to meet all statutory requirements for protection of fish and wildlife. House Bill 2211 also allows the use of the Business Energy Tax Credit and any federal tax credits for the same project. The bill maintains that the current law that the amount of any federal grant must be reduced from the eligible cost for the state tax credit. The bill applies to projects constructed or installed after January 1, 2007, and the House Revenue Committee added a sunset of January 2016. And there's also in your packet, I'm not going to read it to you, a set of metrics that were set up so we can evaluate this credit and how it's doing. It's in your packet. I won't read those metrics. The Department of Energy has estimated the revenue impact of the bill would be about $1.2 billion the next biennium, and the revenue impact is included in the governor's budget. This passed unanimously through your Revenue Committee and the Energy Environment Committee. I would welcome any questions or comments. Expect a lively discussion and urge an eye passage.
Representative Mike Shuffler.
Thank you, Speaker. To the bill, sir.
To the bill.
You know, last year my happy face was on another website for supporting tax credits. Too many tax credits, in their opinion. But I'm glad to see that we see the wisdom on the value of tax credits to incent and attract and retain investment here in the state of Oregon so that we can create the jobs we need, and from the profits and the taxes we get from those wages, we generate the revenue we need to educate, incarcerate, medicate people here in the state of Oregon. So check your computer. We're all on the websites, and I'm just proud of being on that one, too. Thank you very much.
Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
Colleagues, I have working relationships with multiple colleagues who potentially may benefit from House Bill 2211B.
Representative Greg Smith has stated his conflict and it is noted for the record. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Hunt, how do you vote? Hunt votes aye. Representative McPherson, how do you vote? Representative McPherson? McPherson votes aye. Representative Crummell votes aye. House Bill 2211B, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2212, related to renewable energy and prescribing an effective date.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2212A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2212 is the third bill in this biofuels package and is a close cousin to the business energy tax credit. This is the residential energy tax credit, affectionately known as RETC. House Bill 2212 makes the incentives for residential use of renewable energy more effective by making a number of changes to the residential energy tax credit. This tax credit has been used by Oregonians to install over 20,000 solar heating and electric systems and over 200,000 energy-efficient appliances in their homes and to buy over 4,000 hybrid vehicles. House Bill 2212 allows a tax credit for more than one qualifying item purchased in the same year. Current law has been interpreted to limit an individual to only one tax credit per year, even if they have purchased more than one qualifying system in that year. House Bill 2212 would allow a tax credit each for each solar water heater and solar electric system and for multiple energy-efficient appliances, even if they were all purchased by the consumer in the same year. House Bill 2212 also increases the maximum tax credit for fuel cells and for wind generation from the current limit of $1,500 up to $6,000, taken over 4 years. This is the same as the increase in solar electric systems passed in 2005. Like solar electric systems, wind and fuel cells cost substantially more than renewable energy systems used for space or hot water heating. House Bill 2212 also makes high-efficiency wood stoves eligible for the residential energy tax credit. These wood stoves are much cleaner burning than normal wood stoves or fireplaces and use high-density wood pellets to reduce pollution and increase energy efficiency. These stoves are encouraged by the Department of Environmental Quality because of their cleaner features. The bill applies to alternative energy devices bought or installed after January 1st of 2007, so it would cover decisions made by Oregonians for this entire tax year. The Department of Energy estimated that the bill would have a revenue impact of about $1.9 million in the next biennium. This bill's revenue impacts have been included in the governor's budget. As well, in your packets, you will also find for this bill the matrices that were mentioned both for 2210 and 2211. This is a good bill, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those are the opinion. The bill should pass. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Nelson votes aye. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Butler votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2212A, having received constitutional majority, is declared passed. Colleagues, we'll now go to first reading of House bills, but I do want to encourage folks to stay on through announcements, please. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 2823 related to internment camps. House Bill 2829 related to Jameer in criminal case. House Bill 2837 related to medical malpractice insurance and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2838 related to registration plates for persons with disabilities. House Bill 2839 related to corporate minimum taxes prescribing an effective date and providing for revenue raising requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 2840 related to provision of medical services and workers' compensation claims. House Bill 2841 relating to human trafficking. House Bill 2842 relating to the Commission for the Products of Disabled Individuals and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2843 relating to crime. House Bill 2844 relating to wave energy enterprises zones and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2845 relating to career schools. House Bill 2850 relating to primary care health services for children. House Bill 2851 relating to transportation needs person with development disabilities task force and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2852 relating to Port of Portland peace officers. House Bill 2853 related to adverse possession. House Bill 2854 relating to public safety offenders. House Bill 2855 relating to state parks and recreation commission fees. House Bill 2858 relating to guilt except for insanity. House Bill 2859 relating to climate change. House Bill 2860 relating to civil actions against school districts. House Bill 2861 relating to probation conditions of sex offenders. House Bill 2862 relating to safety belts in school vehicles. House Bill 2863 relating to child support. House Bill 2864 relating to final disposition of human remains. House Bill 2865 relating to driving while under the influence of intoxicants. House Bill 2866 relating to travel plazas. House Bill 2867 relating to dental hygiene and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2868 relating to Attorney General. House Bill 2869 relating to sheriffs and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2870 relating to dwelling for on-site security for exclusive farm use zone. House Bill 2871 relating to consumer loans and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2872 relating to use of mobile communication device while driving. House Bill 2873 relating to use of mobile communication device by persons under 21 years of age while driving. House Bill 2889 relating to devices for certain individuals in state parks. House Bill 2893 relating to mandatory workplace communications to employee about employees' opinions. House Bill 2894 relating to health care. House Bill 2895 relating to notification to law enforcement officials by health care providers. House Bill 2896 relating to criminal investigations. House Bill 2897 relating to driving while under the influence of intoxicants. House Bill 2898 relating to motor vehicle theft prevention and appropriating money. House Bill 2899 relating to documents submitted to the Department of Transportation. House Bill 2900 relating to political parties. House Bill 2901 relating to public funds and appropriating money. House Bill 2902 relating to penalties for violations of the maximum weight requirements. House Bill 2903 relating to state contracting for services performed within the United States. House Bill 2904 relating to sentencing and providing for a criminal sentence reduction that requires approval by a two-thirds majority. House Bill 2905 relating to Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. House Bill 2906 relating to discrimination in education, declared emergency. House Bill 2907 relating to variable annuities. House Bill 2908 relating to uninsured motorist coverage. House Bill 2909 relating to statutes of limitation. House Bill 2910 relating to elections. House Bill 2916 relating to plastic containers. House Bill 2918 relating to health benefit plan coverage of pervasive development disorder. House Bill 2919 relating to elections and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2920 relating to public records. House Bill 2921 relating to lay representation and land use plan planning to declare an emergency. House Bill 2922 relating to taxation for funding for revenue raising requested by approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 2923 relating to emergency preparedness, appropriate money, and declare an emergency. House Bill 2924 relating to Oregon Territorial CMAP project, appropriate money, and declare an emergency. House Bill 2926 relating to reinsurance program for medical professional liability insurance policies. House Bill 2927 relating to task force on anatomical gift donations and declare an emergency. House Bill 2928 relating to retail pet stores. House Bill 2929 relating to human cloning. House Bill 2930 relating to fee waiver of identification card. House Bill 2933 relating to criminal justice. House Bill 2934 relating to law enforcement. House Bill 2935 relating to grant of water rights to City of Oregon and declare an emergency. House Bill 2936 relating to motor vehicles. House Bill 2938 relating to property tax exemptions for veterans. House Bill 2939 relating to corrections officers. House Bill 2940 relating to penalties for violation of wildlife laws. House Bill 2941 relating to motor vehicle transactions. House Bill 2942 relating to notice of cancellation of insurance policies. House Bill 2943 relating to standards of conduct for providers of independent medical examinations of workers' compensation claims. House Bill 2944 relating to determination of applicability of prevailing wage rates. House Bill 2945 relating to taxation for prescribing effective date. House Bill 2946 relating to health care delivery system pilot programs. House Bill 2947 relating to education declaring an emergency. House Bill 2948 relating to tax deferrals for emerging businesses. House Bill 2949 relating to DNA. House Bill 2950 relating to Port Commissioner training. House Bill 2951 relating to senior citizens appropriate money declaring an emergency. House Bill 2952 relating to financial reporting to prepaid managing care health service organization contracting for Department of Human Services. House Bill 2954 relating to allocation to problem gambling treatment fund. House Bill 2955 relating to funding for the Department of State Police appropriate money declaring an emergency. House Bill 2956 relating to water quality standard development. House Bill 2957 relating to a definition of science. House Bill 2959 relating to recordation of instruments and county records. House Bill 2960 relating to land use planning for large urban parks. House Bill 2961 relating to domestic violence, appropriate money for funding for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 2962 relating to fire protection. House Bill 2963 relating to tax expenditures and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 2964 relating to court minimum taxes and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 2965 relating to senior citizens' medical expense subtractions for tax purposes and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 2966 relating to taxation providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 2967 relating to tobacco product taxation prescribing effective date and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 2968 relating to moist snuff prescribing effective date and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 2969 relating to rehabilitation residential property. House Bill 3328 relating to child abuse investigations.
Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2109 relating to construction contractors. House Bill 2149 relating to penalties for violation of laws governing alcoholic beverages. House Bill 2239 relating to central assess for property tax purposes. House Bill 2283 relating to Oregon Investment Council and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2340 relating to evidence. House Bill 2348 relating to health insurance policies. House Bill 2379 relating to criminal procedure. House Bill 2460 relating to Oregon family leave.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Chair requests unanimous consent that rules be suspended, that bills remaining on today's consent calendar be carried over to the proper place on Monday, March 5th, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Third reading of House bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that rules be suspended and that the House bills remaining on today's third reading be carried over to their proper place on Monday, March 5th, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business line on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5519 relating to financial administration of the Commission of Judicial Fitness and Disability appropriate money and declaring an emergency.
Bills read first time. Or the bill, read first time, is passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, you got paid today. So the first thing you need to do is make your donation to the food bank. The food bank drive ends this week. Also, please thank all of your staff and the floor staffs that helped with these events all week, and the big grand finale is today. And 12:30, we're going to have the live auction. You can bid on a couple of trips to casinos for overnight, some Blazer tickets. Sun River overnight and spa treatments. Golf with Mike Dewey. He's not that good. Also, we have a great prize here, a six-pack of Billy Carter beer. There's also the regular silent auction is open until 2 p.m. Get down and help the people who've worked hard all week. And let's end this food drive on a positive note. Thanks, guys. Before you go up to eat, go down and participate in the live auction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Veterans Committee will meet at 1:20.
Representative Hunt.
Democrats will have a short caucus. It won't cost you anything. So grab your lunch. Come up to the caucus room, please.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Committee on Information Technology will meet at 1:15. Thank you.
Representative Comp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And to Representative Hunt, I've never had a caucus meeting that didn't cost me something. But Subcommittee on Education will meet at 1:20.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans will caucus immediately after floor session.
Are there further announcements? Anyone who has not picked up their envelope from Sergeant at Arms, please do so in the back of the chamber. Any other announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Krummel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to point out that there may be a House rule violation that has occurred from the House Committee on Education. Rule number 8.15, sub 5, sub sub A, sub 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 I, has to do with notice of committee meetings. And it says here that the notice includes but is not limited to posting of written notice on a bulletin board immediately outside the House chambers. It goes on to say in sub 2, in sub 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 2, excuse me, I C, that all other committee meetings shall not be held without at least 48 hours notice. The meeting that is set for this afternoon at 3 o'clock was not noticed outside the House chamber here until 3:50 p.m. yesterday, which is not even 24 hours notice. It is only, it's actually 23 hours and 50 minutes notice. The other thing with regards to that is that while I recognize that at the end of the committee hearing on Tuesday, it was noted that they would carry it over to today, that was at the end of the meeting, which would not have been a 48-hour notice because of the fact that the meeting ended before this meeting will start again at the end of the day. And I just wanted to report that, Mr. Speaker, that we want to make sure that, our committees are indeed following the rules. Thank you. And I also would note that I said there may be a violation.
Representative Buckley, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just would like to say that if there has been a violation of the rules, I would hang my head in shame if I did not know in my heart that the Education Committee is fully committed to following not only the letter but the spirit of public notice so that we can have full participation in our committee hearings. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much, Representative. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A lighter note. Yesterday was a special day in America's history, and I just wanted to wish a happy birthday to our Republican colleagues and quote from what Garrison Keillor read in his Writer's Almanac yesterday. It's on February 28th that about 50 opponents of slavery gathered in Ripon, Wisconsin to found the Republican Party. The group was made up of Northern Democrats, Whigs, and a small anti-slavery party called the Free Soil Party. They're remarkably successful for a brand new party. In 1856, after just 2 years in existence, they elected 92 congressional representatives and 20 senators, and they came close to capturing the presidency with their candidate John Fremont. Just 4 years after that, of course, they did win the presidency with their candidate Abraham Lincoln. No political party since then, no new political party since then, has won the presidency. So happy birthday, Republicans.
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to point out to the representative
violations of the rules are not to be reported here, but they're to be reported to the Rules Committee for proper action. So my recommendation is you take your statement of violation to the Rules Committee, and they'll prepare the proper action for this violation.
I am informed by the clerk that for clarification, actually, if there is a concern about enforcement of the rules, that it's appropriate to report it to the Speaker's office so that I can consult with the parliamentarian. So that's appropriate action. Thank you. Are there any further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:30 a.m., Monday, March 5th, 2007.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m., Monday, March 5, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m., Monday, March 5, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.